Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
All right, we're going to be talking about the trade sales for December 2007. With me, as always, for these trades discussion is Chris Marshall, the Collected Comics Library. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great, John. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Doing good. You ready to go take care of this massive month of December, which has just a huge amount of stuff that came out?
I am ready.
Yeah, well, we're only going to have that first 100 items, of course, but, you know... December, holiday spending, you know, strong economy. Oh, wait, maybe not a strong economy.
Yeah, not in Michigan, let me tell you.
I tell you, this was a interesting month because I know personally I've got a ton of stuff in December, most of it more comics than trades. But when we get to that top item on the trades side, which there's a lot to talk about, it was interesting the number it came in at. But before we get to that, let's look at the breakdown of how the top 100 trades did between the various publishers. As is no surprise, Marvel came out on top. They had 32 of the items, 25 of them were new, 7 were reorders. About 20%, or 20 items, gee, it's nice with the 100, you know, it works out the math a lot easier, in December were reorders. So 7 of them being from Marvel, again, not a big surprise. But Marvel came in with 34.43% of the total sales of the top 100 trades by units and 43.76% by dollars. And of course, a lot of that is they just had a higher average price than most of the other publishers. DC came in second place with a total of 19 items, 5 were reorders, 14 were new, and had about 21% both by units and dollars. It was 20.69 by units and 21.59 by dollars. So, I mean, that right there takes care of about 55% of the total volume of sales by units and about 65% by dollars. Not unusual. This is pretty common for Marvel and DC to do that. Dark Horse came in fairly strong with 12.58% by units and 10.82 by dollars. They did that with only 12 items on the list. And then we've got Viz. And usually, I mean, Viz does fairly well with the manga. It had 7 items. It did 9.48% by units, but only 4.18 by dollars. Again, lower average cover price. Whereas Marvel's average cover price was $24.27, Viz's average cover price was $8.68. So, big difference there.
One thing that I've noticed straight off the bat in looking at this data is that looking at the total items, mm-hmm. Marvel with 32, DC with 19, and Dark Horse with 12, and you look at their reorder items, all three of these companies, nearly 25% of their books that came out were reorder items.
Yeah.
And I find that, I mean, I know that Marvel and DC have a lot of reorder items, but the three of these companies combined having, you know, it just seems like a lot of reorder activity during the month of December.
I think a lot of it is December being more of, again, the holiday buying month certainly factors in. But, you know, again, trades have a longer shelf life. To a degree, the fact that only 20% of the top 100 items were reorder activity is what's surprising. Because, you know, once these trades come out, they sell for the next 10, 20, you know, however many years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, again, that Marvel and DC, like you're saying, have a higher percentage of reorder items compared to a lot of the other publishers. But to me, this is more a reflection of the need for the trades list to go beyond the 100 items. You know what I mean?
Right, right. It just struck me as a high number compared to the previous months that we looked at.
Yeah, I'd have to go check on previous months what the percentages were.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think it was only about 13% last month.
Yeah.
So, but I think a lot of that also is December was a bit of a unique month in terms of the nature of some of the items that did and didn't come out. Mm-hmm. And really, neither Marvel or DC had any kind of big item like they did last month, with DC having both the Heroes hardcover and the League of Extraordinary Gentleman Black Dossier hardcover.
Right.
So, I mean, when you get down to the sixth publisher on the list, Avatar, which had 2 items and only took 3.41% by units and 1.86% of the total for the top 100 by dollars, one of those was the top-selling item for the month. And since Diamond started releasing final sales information of what actually shipped to retailers for the month. This is only the second time an item from a non-premier publisher took the top slot. And I'm sure you remember the first time that happened, which was, I believe, May of last year. It might have been June, but I think it was May, with the first Family Guy graphic novel or collected or trade or whatever it was.
Yeah, I recall we talked about all three of those volumes that came out. They just shot right up the charts.
Right. That trade for Family Guy did, I think, around 15,000 units, if I recall correctly. And if we take a look at the top-selling item this month, in rank one, of course, from Avatar, it's The Chronicles of Wormwood, The Last Enemy graphic novel, with a $7.99 cover price. This was an original graphic novel, 48 pages, and it sold 6,018 copies. And really, it's a matter of perspective as to, did this do really well? Did this do average? Did this do not so well?
Mm-hmm.
It took the top slot. It must have done brilliantly. And frankly, for a non-premier publisher to place in the top slot, awesome. I think that's great. I think Avatar should be commended for that. They did a great job. Flip side, 6,000 units. That's 20,000 units less than the top-selling item last month, which, of course, was the Heroes hardcover, which had Alex Ross cover, a Jim Lee cover. It had the backing and support of the Heroes, the TV show, the franchise, whatever you want to call that marketing push.
Oh, Jeff Loeb, and, yeah, I mean, NBC. I mean, yeah, Universal Entertainment and General Electric, everybody. Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, you go with a mainstream property like Heroes and do a big production for the hardcover with name creators, etc. And then, you know, you compare that to Chronicles of Wormwood, The Last Enemy, which frankly, at 48 pages, I'm not sure it belongs on the trade list. I think a strong case could be made that it should be over on the top comics list. And really, the only justification I could see for it not being there is maybe the price, but even that's a stretch. And it would have ranked, I think, at 225 on the top comics list this month, which frankly, for an independent comic, is still pretty good. I mean, it's right there around where the Nexus Origin one-shot did.
Well, let me ask you this. What's the lowest price item on the top 100 trades?
The lowest price item?
Is it that $6.95 Star Wars Clone Wars Adventures, which is number two? Rank number two? Could be.
Yeah, it is. The next lowest price is $6.99, which is the Marvel Adventures Hulk number one, down at rank 78, and the Marvel Adventures Fantastic Four Volume 7 Silver Surfer, down at rank 92.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What is the highest priced comic book for this month?
That is a very interesting question. The highest priced comic book was...
Or monthly book, we should say.
Well, highest priced item on the top comics list. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
Was $5.50... And that was, there were two items for that. There was G.I. Joe America's Elite number 30. I believe that was a alternate cover for that. Because normally, because I get that and I know I didn't pay $5.50. And
okay.
Then Chucky Ritchie from Devil's Due. And again, I believe in both of those cases, those were, yeah, photo cover for the Chucky, and let me check the solicitation information. I'm pretty sure it was an alternate cover on the G.I. Joe America's
Elite.
Okay,
so more of a specialty book.
Right. However, the highest priced item that has been on the top comics list has been $9.99.
Really?
Because on the top comics spreadsheet I do, I've got a breakdown of the prices, just because I'm trying to keep track of, okay, how strong is that $2.99 price point? And so I've got entries for everything that's been on there for the last year or two, I think, in terms of the different price points, and $9.99. I'd have to do some research to figure out what that was and when that was.
Okay.
But again, that $7.99 cover price, there's no reason it couldn't have been on the top comics chart.
Now let me throw you another curveball. Do we know what the page count is, the highest number page count on the top 100 comic books of the month? Or no real way to tell?
I'm going to go with at least 80 pages.
80 pages, okay.
Because those...
And one of the 80-page giants from DC, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Damn you, Jimmy Olsen.
Yes! Jimmy Olsen must die.
He must die. Oh my God, the inner geek really comes out, doesn't
yeah.
it?
They don't have many issues left to kill him off either.
Yeah.
That's another story.
No, it's the Atom. No, it's the Atom 80-page giant. There we go, number two. Or issue number two.
Right.
for $4.99. So a difference of, 48 pages for that one book, but the price is higher. And then you've got the Atom at 80 pages at $5. So, where's the cutoff? You know, what makes it a graphic novel, quote unquote? Granted, the 80-page Giant, those are all reprint stories, right?
Doesn't matter.
Right, but the argument can be made is they were printed, 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, you're right.
30 years ago.
They are a collected edition.
Yeah, that's a collected edition. Seriously, there's no new material in those.
That's funny. Yeah. I don't know, because, I really have no idea how some of these items get on some of these lists.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you take those Atom books or the Countdown books, you put a hard stock cover on there, right?
Mm-hmm.
A cardboard stock cover on there. You jack the price up by an extra buck or two, and it's a trade paperback.
Yeah.
It's a thin trade paperback, just like the item number 2 is on there, which is Star Wars Clone Wars Adventures Volume 10, which that's just a digest-sized book of 3 stories. There's nothing great about that.
Yeah.
I mean, not talking about content-wise.
Exactly.
But just the format-wise. And that book is probably only 96 pages, I'm guessing. If that. I don't have it in front of me, but...
I picked up the first one of those. I haven't actually read it yet. But you've been talking enough good things about them, I figured I would. It does not say in the solicitation information. But as I recall, those were at least 80 pages, if not longer.
I'll look it up on Dark Horse real quick.
So, I think... Content-wise, a case could be made that Chronicles of Wormwood, The Last Enemy, could be justifiably considered a comic book. However, it's getting probably a bit more exposure and notoriety having topped the trades chart. Flip side, I agree with you entirely that those Countdown Presents 80-page specials or whatever on The Atom, which came in at ranks... 180 and 186 on the top comics chart with 9,398 units for the first one and just one unit under 9,000, so 8,999 units for that second one. Those are clearly collected editions and therefore should have arguably been on the trade side, and both of those would have taken the top slots.
Wow.
It's such a nebulous distinction as to what falls and where in some of these gray areas.
Yeah, whose call is that? Is that Diamond's call? To say, oh, we'll put this over here and put this over there?
I don't know.
Is it how, a DC submits it to where's the medium? It's kind of like when we see a book like the 300 art book that you can find. Those are art books and, filmography books that we see occasionally pop up. And I'm sure we're going to see more with Iron Man and Dark Knight and the Hulk movies coming out.
Yeah. I don't know. I think in this case, the fact they called it an original graphic novel may have been what got it tagged onto this list. But I do not know.
Those Star Wars digests are 96 pages, by the way.
Okay. So, that's twice the page count.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting of that, All right, so that's Star Wars, it's Volume 10. That's the last volume?
That's the last volume.
Interesting, okay. That did 5,464 units.
Yeah, last volume, look how well it sold. It's like, why not continue the series? Well, you know what would have been cool? And I was thinking about this the other day when I saw that Knights of the Old Republic number 25 came out just this past Wednesday. What was it, the 30th?
Okay.
That it would have been neat to, that book starts off the new Vector storyline. That's
going
to run through all the books. It would have been neat to have Vector run through the Clone Wars adventures.
Oh, wow.
They could have had it just in one panel, even, just kind of like an Easter egg. That would have been neat to, how much that would have drummed up sales right there.
Yeah, that would have been cool if they'd done kind of a special 11th volume.
Yeah, where one chapter would have been a Vector tie-in. And it's like, okay, get it. Because now Dark Horse only has 4 titles, monthly titles, where they could have had a 5th in this.
Yeah.
And that would have been kind of cool.
That would have been interesting.
But that's the Star Wars comics geeking me, so.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how that crossover plays out for them.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to reading it myself, because depending how I like this issue and the next is going to determine if I jump on the other titles or not to follow the storyline out.
It's going to be interesting to see how they collect it, too. If they collect it and do a Vector trade or they don't.
I would kind of expect a vector trade for each of the titles.
Well, there are only two issues in each title, though, or two or three issues in each title.
There's four.
So, yeah, you could do that. Yeah, you could. Oh, there are four.
There's
yeah.
four for Knights of the Old Republic, two okay, for the two right. that take place concurrently, which could be traded together, and then... But, I mean, they could just do one whole trade of the whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see how they package that.
Okay.
Item number three on the list this month was Ultimates 2, the hardcover, and I believe that had the whole run of the second series of Ultimates, so yeah, mm-hmm. 1 through 13, for a $34.99 price tag, and that sold 4,980 units, which for hardcovers is fairly decent opening numbers. But again, all three of these top items are good solid sales, don't get me wrong, I think, you know, the publisher should be proud of them, but... Again, compared to a lot of other months where we'll have items that do 12 to 15,000 easily sometimes for the top trades, a little lackluster.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Avatar, totally different case because it's a non-premier publisher. For something out of the back half to take the top thing is doing great. Now, it's also interesting that with this fourth item on the list, we get our fourth publisher on the list. It's rare for us, I think, to have, although I'd have to double-check that many different publishers, you know, so early on.
And DC's not even one of them.
Yeah, DC barely made the top 10. Hell, they made the top 15.
Yeah.
But slots 4, 5, and 6 went to Viz with Naruto volumes 27, 26, and 25. So each successive one doing better than the previous. And let's see, volume 25 did 4,752 units. Volume 26 went up by 21 to get to 4,773. And then volume 27 went up another 86 units to 4,859. And once again, all three of these came out on the same week. And I believe, and we'll talk about this when we do the year-end numbers,
mm-hmm.
that Naruto had 15 items this year. I could be wrong on that. I'd have to go look. But a lot of them just in the last few months. I continue to be surprised that they don't stagger these by a week. I mean, to hell with Spider-Man going, you know, thrice monthly with Amazing Spider-Man. Naruto has gone thrice monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And for trades that are, how long are these? These are decent length trades. They're like 200 pages, maybe, I'm thinking.
Oh, I didn't know they were that long, really.
I don't know. I don't get these.
Okay. Yeah, you and me both.
184 pages for number 14.
Jeez.
So, multiply that by 3, you're getting 500 pages a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Over 500, you know. So, I mean, Naruto's going strong, and the fact that it was, you know, 3 of the top 10 items, hell, half the top 6 items, says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
At rank 7, we've got X-Men Volume 1, the Complete Onslaught Epic, and that was $29.99, and trade paperback sold 4,404 units, or an estimated that. And this is one of those where they're jumping around titles that it collects. It collects 2 issues of X-Men, 2 issues of Uncanny, 2 issues of Avengers, the Onslaught X-Men one-shot, an issue of X-Men, an issue of X-Force, an issue of Cable, an issue of Incredible Hulk, and let's see, this is chronological order across 4 volumes.
I never read Onslaught.
Really?
No, you know what I read? I read when Onslaught was happening, when Heroes Were Born happened.
Right.
Right? Because I wasn't reading Marvel at that time. I went back to my local comic book store, and I picked up the final storylines of, what was it, Fantastic Four, Thor the Hulk, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, and Captain America. And the Captain America one was Man Without a Country,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome. And I bought all 5 of those titles, and I skipped over this whole Onslaught, and I went right into Heroes Reborn. And I've always wanted to go back. I mean, I've heard good things and bad things. I guess I've heard mixed reviews about this whole Onslaught stuff. But I really want to read it because I feel like I've missed out. Because I've read, like, both bookends of the story, but I haven't read the real story.
You should read it.
I'd like to pick it up, yeah.
It's vintage 90s Marvel material.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that both in a good way and a bad way. It's one that had a lasting impact in many regards on the Marvel Universe, because really it was mm-hmm. one of the first kind of clean breaks they did continuity-wise, which they then later kind of uncleaned and put back in or whatever, but certainly it's worth reading. I'm not going to say it's necessarily brilliant stuff, but...
No, neither was Heroes Reborn, but it was decent. I'm not about to go get Onslaught Reborn that was just brought out last year, but...
Yeah, I just finished reading that the other week.
Is that worth it, or what were your impressions of that?
I liked one aspect of the way the story ended. They left one character in a very interesting position, but the rest of it, completely forgettable. I would not recommend reading that.
Okay.
It was going back to the well, and frankly, you know, Jeff Loeb wrote it, and I'm not going to say I was ever a huge Jeff Loeb fan, but it's been a while since I've been really impressed with some of his writing. You know, I would say that the early Superman Batman stuff was good, but really since then, his stuff hasn't been clicking with me. And I'm not entirely sure why. So I felt the Onslaught Reborn was just kind of phoned in some respects.
Didn't they revisit that storyline in a series of... what was it?
They did a series of one-shots.
Wasn't there a Rebel?
Yeah. Rebel, Young Allies.
But that was brought out a couple years later, though. That wasn't done right away.
That was only a few years ago.
Yeah, okay.
What they did is they did the Onslaught stuff. At one point, the Thunderbolts went to Counter-Earth, where that stuff had kind of been moved to.
Okay.
So we got some of the, you know, Bucky and some of the other characters a bit there. They came back, the stuff kind of fell into limbo again, whatever. And then they did these five one-shots or whatever as kind of a fifth-week event, I think. Or maybe it was just a series of weekly ones, whatever. It was Young Allies, it was Rebel, I forget what the other ones were. They were good, though. I liked them.
There was one, and I distinctly remember this because it was probably the best epilogue, epilogue stories that came out of Heroes Reborn. And there was a Thor annual. And it was a Thor, they did the team-up annuals, and it was Thor, and I think it was Doctor Doom. And it was Thor Annual 1 when the series got rebooted after Heroes Reborn. And they kind of did a whole thing of what happened. It was kind of like a revisitation of what happened to Thor in between Heroes Reborn and his series. And Doctor Doom had this like time machine or teleportation machine. And he found out what happened to Thor and everything was going on. It was really, really interesting. And I'd like to reread that story. I don't have it, though, but I distinctly remember that one book.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you know, as muddled as some of the Heroes Reborn stuff was when they outsourced essentially to Image for a year there, when the stuff came back and we got the Kurt Busiek, George Perez Avengers, and we got some of these other great teams and some of these other books, I mean, it really revitalized a lot of the Marvel Universe. So, I mean, some good stuff came out of it. All right, next up in rank number 8, we've got Ultimate Fantastic Four, Volume 9, with Silver Surfer. And that trade paperback did 4,233 units. That's about 14% less than the opening numbers, or for the total numbers, excuse me, for the previous volume. And really, aside from Naruto, so far, everything else that's had a previous volume, like that Star Wars Clone Wars Volume 10, and really that's about it, has been going down a little. But again, opening numbers versus total sales, you got to expect that. And then the first DC item on the list is in slot 9. It's Tales of the Multiverse, Batman Vampire, the trade paperback, with 3,778 units. And that's a collection of Batman Dracula Red Rain, Batman Bloodstorm, and Batman Crimson Mist. And really, I'm a little surprised by how this one did, because I would think most of those one-shots are not that hard to come by. And I wouldn't think they're that expensive.
I find them in like the dollar trade bins, you know, the 50% off trade bins at comic book shows. I've only read one of these. I have Red Rain. I have that down in my basement. I never read Bloodstorm or Crimson Mist, but you know, Doug Munch, I mean, these are good stories, even though I read the first one.
I read all three, and I'm just not a Kelly Jones fan.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like that style of art. So I was less than thrilled by these.
Yeah, but Doug Munch, though, you know, he's a good writer for something like this, being a little more macabre, because he did, you know, he's more famous for Moon Knight.
Right. Well, and Kelly Jones was a good fit for the artist on these. Don't get me wrong. I think they had the right creative team, and I think they did good work. It just wasn't to my tastes.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I'll tell you what I don't like. I don't like the title of this book being Tales of the Multiverse. I know why they're doing it, because they're tapping into Countdown and 52, and you know, they're doing it with, I think, the Booster Gold book too, Or there's another trade out there, the Tales of the Multiverse. I really don't like that title.
You know, I don't know why they're distancing themselves from the Elseworlds.
Yeah.
I think that was a mistake. And it's one of those where branding for a lot of these companies is just such a bizarre concept. They're inconsistent with it. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go with the Tales of the Multiverse, now I haven't seen the cover for this one, but I really doubt they went with the Earth logos that they've been using on Countdown and stuff like that. And you think if they're going to represent these things and go back, hell, toss somewhere, you know, inconspicuously on the cover which Earths these things are taking place of on in the new multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm pulling up the cover on ComicBookDB, and yeah, there's no sign of that.
Yeah.
And it's like, missed opportunity there, but, you know, not surprising. Rounding out the top 10 is another Marvel title. This time it's Criminal Volume 2 Lawless, the trade paperback, with 3,635 units. And that's off almost 1%, which really is, you know, 34 copies, from the total sales of the first volume. And, you know, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. How is that title doing in monthly? Did it have a monthly issue this time around? It did not.
I think Ed Brubaker's the best writer out there right now. I think, you know, with Captain America and Iron Fist and Daredevil, he's just, and Criminal, he on top of everything right now. He's my favorite writer.
I have not been reading Criminal, but I would completely agree. The work he's doing on Daredevil, certainly on Captain America, stuff he's doing over on Iron Fist, I'm loving. I mean, these are great mm-hmm. titles. He is just doing excellent work right now across the board, and I hope he can keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I hope he doesn't get burnt out or anything.
The storyline he's been doing on Captain America, particularly over the last, you know, 9 months, whatever, with mm-hmm. Captain America still being dead, it has been phenomenal. It would have been so easy for that to just, you know, have spun out of control and gotten really bad.
Yeah, he even talked about that on Word Balloon.
Yeah.
Suntress has a really good interview with him this week.
Oh, I believe it.
You know, I'm almost sorry to see a new Captain America come along because I'm so used to having Bucky just being the Winter Soldier.
Well, and talk about a hard sell. I mean, there were two characters you couldn't bring back for the longest time, and of course on the Marvel side that was Bucky. You could argue on the DC side either Barry Allen or Jason Todd, but
or Hal. I mean, what do you do with Hal?
I mean,
there's so many ways to go in that. So,
but I mean, on the Marvel side, the definitive he's dead and stays dead was Bucky. Yet Brubaker brought him back in a credible, believable, and acceptable manner.
Well, that's because of the way that of how Bucky quote unquote died. I mean, it was a flashback episode. I forget, you know, something in the 1970s, wasn't it? It was a flashback that Cap remembered how Bucky died, but they never found the body. I mean, Bucky never died in regular monthly form when he was being brought out in the 1940s and 1950s.
True, true. But so much of Cap's character at times was kind of mourning the loss of Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring Bucky back in a way that didn't cheapen that, didn't remove that, but put a whole new spin on it was what was so cool.
Well, that's because you saw Barry Allen die. Well, and you saw Jason Todd die. You know, you definitely saw him die.
Oh, yeah.
Barry, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But, yeah, with the Winter Soldier, I thought it was a great concept. And I hope Bucky stays long. And, you know, I'm really interested to see not only how he does in his own title, because you kind of get the feeling how Bucky is going to be, what Bucky's mission is in Captain America, the title.
Mm-hmm.
But if he ever will fit into the Avengers.
Interesting, yeah. Don't know. I mean, Brubaker's done such a good job of making Bucky, be it as the Winter Soldier or just, you know, Bucky, whatever, such a viable and strong character for the Marvel Universe.
Right.
And, I mean, he's also done that over on Iron Fist. I mean, mm-hmm. you look at the last Iron Fist series prior to this one by Brubaker and Fraction, and nobody remembers it. And I don't blame them. It was not that good. But to take one that the last go-around, the character was just kind of a generic martial arts guy that who cares, and to turn it into a character with a legacy, a character that's very interesting, a character that a lot of people are excited to read about, that's impressive. And to do so in the span of less than 12 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Brubaker and Fraction have accomplished more on the 1 year of that title in terms of kind of rebuilding a fan base for Iron Fist than probably, you know, certainly the last series, probably the one before that did. So, and it's good for Marvel. I mean, it gives them a viable character.
Well, I just think the way he writes, he's so much more humanistic when he writes, if that's even a word. But when you see Iron Man confront Bucky, right?
Mm-hmm.
I almost don't want to see the costume of the Iron Man. I want to see Tony Stark.
You're right. There's a human element.
I want to see the human element. I don't want to see the superhero element.
Right. There's an emotional connection.
Superhero element is great for the Avengers, you know, but not in this book, man.
You're right.
But, I mean, it works. He pulls it off.
It's that emotional connection to the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah, he's doing great stuff, so. Okay, let's jump around a little on some of these other ones.
Sure.
Next one I wanted to mention was down at rank 17. That's Superman Batman Saga of the Super Sons, the trade paperback.
Why do you want to mention that, John?
Why else would I want to mention that? One, it's great stories. But Bob and I did a back issue spotlight on that, and we had Cameron from DCBS and In Stock Trades as our guest. He's a huge fan of the Super Sons, and really, who can blame him? Again, those are some great stories. It was a lot of fun to go through that, read that, and discuss that. It sold 3,258 units, and for a property that, aside from the Elseworlds 80-page giant short story, which is maybe 6 pages, these characters haven't seen the light of day since 1980.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to see DC, you know, reaching a bit further back into their archives, into kind of that middle zone of things that aren't really, you know, archive material, they aren't really showcase material, and they aren't current material. So it's cool to see them do this. You listened to the episode and you loved it, right?
I thought it was excellent. Yeah, it was great to hear Cameron speak.
Yeah.
I've known the man for a couple of years now, and except for one or two phone calls here and there throughout the years, it was great to actually hear him speak more than, you know, a 20-minute conversation that I've had with him. So it was great.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. He's a good guy.
He knows his stuff, that's for sure.
And it's so clear he's a fan.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing this because he likes the comics, not, you know, because it's just a business or whatever. When I found out he was a fan of this, because Bob and I had talked about doing a back issue spotlight for the Super Sons, because I loved the stories, you know. And he'd mentioned that Cameron was looking forward to the trade. I'm like, really? Invite him on the episode.
Yeah.
So, worked out well.
I've got a question for you. Can we look at a book real quick?
Sure.
Nova Annihilation Conquest.
Okay.
The Nova trade. For the first trade, it looks pretty respectable for Nova. I'm just wondering how he is currently doing on his monthly side.
That is an excellent question.
Do you think Nova will get canceled, or is he in limbo, or you think Nova is being sold strictly out of the whole Annihilation business? Because so far, everything he's been doing seems to be tied into Annihilation, whether it be Annihilation or Annihilation Conquest.
Obviously, Annihilation was a lot of what launched that book.
Yeah, it did, right. And he is a major part in Conquest, which part of this his own title is crossing over into Conquest, which is currently going on right now.
Right. Okay, issue 9 did 30,448 units, which is down about 5.14% or 1,650 units from the previous one. And let's put that into context of how the series is doing. The series started at 42,875 units with the first issue, dropped to 44,519 with issue 2, went up a little with issue 3 to 44,977, so that's a 460-issue jump or so, but went down with number 4 to 40,156, down a little bit more with number 5 to 39,543, number 6 dropped a little further to 36,964, 7 dropped to 34,841, 8 dropped to 32,098, and then 9 dropped to 30,448, like I said earlier. Note that I say dropped a lot.
Yeah.
However, standard attrition is taking its toll. Now, I'd have to check the percentages and stuff on each of these to see if it's kind of within that standard or not, but it ranked at 83 on the comics chart. That is not bad for a title. Certainly 30,000 is very viable sales these days, which it pains me to say. I don't think it's one of those that's kind of on the fast track to destruction or anything of the sort.
Okay.
I certainly hope not, because I am loving the title.
Are you?
Yeah, it's great. Are you reading it?
No. In fact, I'm going to sit down this weekend and read Annihilation's books 1, 2, and 3 and do that for my next podcast.
Cool.
And then I'm going to get the Nova Trade. I'd like to get the Nova Trade and then get ready for, because the Annihilation Conquest hardcover just came out, and I want to get all up to speed on Annihilation.
Right.
So
Bob and I talked about an issue of Nova on the Weekly Comics Spotlight a couple of weeks back.
I think I remember that, yeah.
And both of us are big fans of it. It's a solidly written story. It's very well done.
Mm-hmm.
I think out of all of the Annihilation stuff, that's the one that has the best chance of sticking around for the long haul.
Okay.
And again, it's funny because if you look at the previous Nova series, which I think Eric Larson did, but I could be wrong about that, it's as much of a night and day difference as the current Iron Fist to the previous Iron Fist series.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Should I even bother picking up like the Essential Nova to learn more about the character, or just kind of not even worry about it right now?
That's an excellent question, and one that I cannot answer at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to think if I don't think I picked up the Essential. I know I thought about it. I certainly hope I didn't, because I do know that I picked up the entire run of Nova off mycomicshop.com.
Oh my god.
25 issues. It was like a buck or two a piece.
He had a second series after that, didn't he?
He had the Eric Larson series and another one back prior to that, and I had both of those.
Okay.
So this is the 70s, the original Nova series that I
picked up. So you're all caught up on your Nova.
Well, I will be once I read them.
Okay.
I've got five...
When you're about 55 years old.
Oh, good Lord, I hope not that long. I've got about 500 or 600 back issues that I've bought over the last... Well, since San Diego Con.
Oh, Jesus.
And I blame Bob for all of this. He's a horrible influence. I went over to his place before San Diego, and he's like, hey, you know, here's some stuff you ought to think about reading. You like this, you'd like that, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, so I'm sitting there scribbling some notes of, ooh, I should get, you know, Aztec Ace, I should get Southern Knights, I should get this, that. And, you know, I look around at San Diego, and you know how the back issue selection there isn't what it used to be. They're moving more towards trades, stuff like that. And a lot of these were obscure 80s sort of things. So I'm, you know, coming back afterwards, we're talking, and it's like, you know, hey, there's this, you know, Lone Star Comics has a website, we should check that out. And, oh, wow, these things are affordable there. So I have bought more back issues over the last 8 months than I have easily over the last 8 years.
See, John, I laugh, but in all reality, I am just as far behind as you are, or even more, because I'm getting, you know, these 500-page essentials or showcases, or like the EC archives, of which there are 9 out, and I've only read half of, you know, I've read like 2 or 3 of them, you know, and it just keeps piling up and piling up. But the difference is I get mine in much thicker content than you do.
Yeah.
That's all.
Well, it's funny, though, because while I haven't really gotten on board with the essentials, I have on the showcases.
Yeah.
And aside from opening, I think, the Elongated Man one up to flip through the table of contents to see if the wishing gun had ever been mentioned before.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've opened any of them.
Yeah.
And I got a huge stack of them. And that's one of those that, for me, those are more reference when the mood strikes. If I suddenly decide I've got to read the original run of Teen Titans, I now have a way to go do that very easily. You know, I'm not getting those with the expectation of reading them anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the last week of December, I got 51 new comics. So, you know, just staying up on the comic side sometimes is challenging.
Oh, yeah.
But fun. Don't get me wrong. I love it. So... Rank 20, Watchmen is back on the list for, like, the 35th time. I think it's been on 35 times before, so 36. It did another 3,152 units, bringing the total reported estimated sales to around 61,320, which, of course, is a drop in the bucket as to how many that is no doubt sold, no doubt will sell. I believe that hit on the list every month in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
The first hardcover for Brave and the Bold, the Lords of Luck storyline, showed up at rank 24 with 3,052 units. And, I mean, for a hardcover, that's not too bad.
Mm.
But, frankly, I'm a little disappointed both in how that's done and how the monthly series has been doing. Because, well, I mean, this is Mark Waid, George Perez. Mm-hmm. If these guys can't be hitting it out of the park or whatever every month, because certainly I think they're doing it in terms of the content, but the sales, I mean, the monthly issues, number 9 on the monthly side hit rank 56 with 43,445 units, which, strong sales these days, I suppose, but, you know, pretty far below where it started. It's, you know, well under half of where it started. And that's within, you know, 9 issues. It dropped that far. And I don't think they're doing anything wrong. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I go to it being something of a fickle and just a tough marketplace. One of the things that seems to be doing remarkably well in this fickle and tough marketplace is down at rank 35. We've got some reorder activity for the Buffy the Vampire Slayer Long Way Home trade paperback. It did another 2,426 units, bringing its known total to 12,830. And, I mean, this is doing remarkably well for Dark Horse. You know, it is a sure sign of the strength that not only is this trade doing so well, but like we talked about last month, the individual issues are still doing fairly well.
Right.
And then just below that, we've got some reorder activity for the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Black Dossier hardcover. It did another 2,348 units, bringing its known total to 23,059 units. So it's going to be interesting to see how that absolute does.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We talked last month, and even the month prior, I believe, about the Marvel Encyclopedias Volume 3 and 4, the Hulk and Spider-Man ones, that showed up. And I got an interesting email in response to my article over at Comic Book Resources. And basically somebody had indicated that the store they had been shopping at had essentially just been giving them away, almost, you know, for kind of like pennies on the dollar and whatnot, because they had gotten them for the cost of shipping from Diamond, is what he had said. Now, I certainly have no reason to doubt this guy. I also have no secondary source to back that up. So it's all I'm saying is take it as somebody said this. But it's also the most credible rationale I've heard for why these things are doing so well. You know, we've got another 2,070 units of reorder for that Spider-Man encyclopedia, another 1,743 units for the Hulk encyclopedia hardcover there, and if they are getting kind of, you know, blown out at almost giveaway prices, my theory on that is with the Marvel Universe Handbook coming out in the new hardcover editions, that Marvel is just trying to get rid of any backstock they had on these, figuring it's cheaper than having them sit in a warehouse for eternity, because these may be hard to even give away once the new hardcover Marvel handbooks come out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a theory, and that's going on the presumption that they are indeed, or were indeed, getting blown out for essentially the cost of shipping. And again, I got no reason to doubt that, but I haven't gone through the trouble of getting a secondary source on that either.
Yeah, that sounds logical to me.
Yeah, I mean, once I heard that, and the other thing the guy commented on was that they had done it last month because DC had some strong things, like the Heroes hardcover and the Black Dossier coming out, and they just kind of wanted to, you know, put in something of a showing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to dump the stuff, you may as well do it at a time that helps you and hurts your competition. Not saying that's a stand-up thing to do, but it's business. It's
right,
it's a
exactly.
Smart business decision.
Well, you know, just browsing this list, if you look at number 86 real quick.
Sure.
If, you know, this, it, to me, is just packaging gone wrong. We're talking about Mystic Arcana here, the hardcover, for $25. I think that's mismanagement on Marvel's part. That is a lot of money, and it does not deserve a hardcover for this series. It should have been a trade for $17. It just doesn't seem right to me.
This is a whole thing where I'm not sure what they were thinking with the Mystic Arcana.
Because
right. I read it, overall, I liked it, some more than others. I didn't like the official tarot of the Marvel Universe, and I love those kinds of books. I thought that one was just unreadable.
Uh-huh.
I agree that a $25 hardcover for this, which is really, what, 4 issues and a handbook kind of a thing,
right,
is outrageous. And not only is that kind of packaging gone wrong, but the whole thing was marketed in a way that I had certainly expected some kind of an ongoing to come out of this.
Yeah.
And nothing. You know, it's I believe Bob and I referred to it as kind of one of forgettable, you know, or forgotten, I should say, parts of 2007.
Right.
And we both liked it.
No, I'm sure it was a good series. I'm not saying anything bad about the series.
Right.
I'm just saying that it just seems to be mispackaged, that's all. I mean, if you look at where it shows up on this list.
Well, I mean, 1,216 units for a hardcover. I mean, yes, this has an infinite shelf life. Yes, this could do reorders till it's blue in the face.
Maybe.
But we really have no way of knowing what percentage of the overall sales items do in reorder activity. And there's no way I can tell from the top 100 information, because if this item in particular ever sees reorder activity, it's not going to make the top 100. Hell, it might not make the top 200 or 300 if they were to go that far.
Right.
So obviously it was worth them putting it out because they had pre-orders, so it was a no-risk thing for Marvel. They already had the thing in digital format ready to print because they printed the comics recently. But I agree, why do it as a hardcover? But I take it a step further back even of why did they do the series of one-shots to begin with?
Right.
You know, even if the individual issues had done brilliantly, even if they hadn't, but if this had done 10 times this, great, fine. How do you leverage that success?
Right.
Add to the fact that obviously at 1,200 units, it was not a success. It was not necessarily a failure either, but the item right below it that tied with it in terms of sales was the first volume of Why the Last Man, a trade paperback, which had, in comparison to that $24.99 for the Mystic Arcana hardcover, it was a $12.99 trade paperback for Why the Last Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it sold, as near as we can estimate from the data available from Diamond, the exact same number of copies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say as near as we can tell, because the Diamond Order Index only goes to two decimal places. There's a level of granularity. This could be off by, say, 7 copies different between the two.
That's it?
Well, I mean, you take the sales of Batman
and
divide it by 10,000.
Right.
And you figure half of that is above, half of that's below what we estimated at, ballpark. And this is a simplification. So, I mean, one of these, Why the Last Man could have been as many as 7 units below the Mystic Arcana or identical. It's or above. There's no way of knowing for sure with the granularity of the data. But that's reorder activity for Why the Last Man, which will undoubtedly see continued reorder activity even though the series has ended.
Mm-hmm.
And Mystic Arcana, I think the odds of it seeing any significant reorder activity is low, particularly at that price point, particularly given it's a series of one-shots that nobody really cared about when it came out, and nobody's really talking about now.
I wonder if we're even going to see a trade of this. This might be one of those things where it might not even get traded. So I just look at my list. I don't see it coming down, and usually a book would already be solicited by now, but you know, maybe not. Maybe, you know.
Let me ask you this. It used to be that nothing was ever traded. Trades came along, and then it got to where everything was traded. And we've gotten to this point, and I really haven't kind of gotten a firm grasp on where the stats lie on this. Some things start as trade, go to hardcover, some go to hardcover first, then to trade, some maybe don't do either, whatever. Do you have a good feeling for an average Marvel title, what the likelihood of it going to trade first is versus hardcover first, and what percentage of their output goes to both formats?
You know, it's kind of a mixed bag. It's kind of like, you know, you see a title like Spider-Man Reign get a hardcover right away, but yet we have not even seen a hardcover of Civil War yet. So you never know what the editors are thinking. But eventually, you're right. Everything does get traded, whether it be a hardcover or a softcover, in one way or another. Some just take longer than others to get it done. But in these recent events, in the past couple of years, it seems that everything that is put out in monthly form does ultimately get traded into a trade paperback.
If I had the time, I would put together the information for what issues were in which collected editions for all the collected editions that came out in 2007. And, you know, if I do that, I could go back for the last 10 years. I'd love to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would like to know what percentage of the output for Marvel and DC is essentially guaranteed to be collected, or as much as anything can be guaranteed these days. But it could be that Marvel decided, let's go with a hardcover for Mystic Arcana because they wanted to do the money grab and thought they could justify a higher price with that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you know, if they did a trade, they wouldn't have been able to justify as high of a... I mean, they would have been pushing a $15, $17 cover price for a five-issue collection.
Right.
For a trade. And at this point, you know, I certainly don't see any incentive for them to do a trade of this ever. But on the flip side, I don't see any rationale for them not to offer up a trade at some point. Certainly not for another year or something.
Right.
But you've got the digital files. You've got it ready to print. All you've got to do is essentially, you know, tell the printer, print this and trade. Yeah, it's a little more complicated than that. But you know what I mean. It's...
Right.
You know, the worst... The most work they would have to do is a new cover, maybe. A new ISBN, probably. And saying, print. And... if they go through the risk of putting that cover together and maybe getting the ISBN, whatever, put the solicitation out and nobody bites, cancel it.
Do you think, I mean, I know we love to talk about the digital comics thing going on at Marvel, but do you think something like this would be worth putting up and then tracking how many downloads it is getting and then seeing if, you know, hey, people are downloading it, hey, let's take it off the digital thing and print a trade? Could you test market it that way for something like this?
I certainly hope they're tracking the downloads for that. But I seriously question how useful that information would be to determining what you really ought to print and publish.
Right.
Because I think you're hitting, in many respects, certainly there's overlap, but I think a fundamentally different audience. I think a lot of us old fogies are less likely to go download, you know, something like this and then go buy a trade or something, because I think we're less likely to just download it to begin with.
Right.
Well, I believe when CrossGen was still around, they had made comments that what sold best in monthly format was different than what sold best in trade format, was different than what did best on their comics on the web format. And that the different formats, certain properties, you know, skewed differently. Certain things, you know, and I don't recall which titles did better where or if they had any kind of comments as to why. But if I were at Marvel and they had this available for download and I saw it doing gangbusters, I would be a little hesitant to say, okay, let's print it on the assumption it's going to do gangbusters in print.
Right. Nah, it's just something to think about, really.
No, certainly it is. I just have to wonder how much of the digital stuff online for them is doing it at the cost of print sales.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way of knowing.
No.
But I'd love to get my hands on those download numbers. I mean, there's no way in hell I'd ever get them. But that would be something to be very interesting to compare to how the comics are doing, how the trades are doing, and also downloads over time. You know, if they put this up, or for something like the Emma Frost, where they've got the whole 18-issue series, do people come back on a regular basis? Do they download a whole bunch at once? Or actually, it's not even a download. You read it online. And just how the reading pattern is for that format versus...
Yeah, you can track the click-throughs, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You could do all kinds of things like that.
So who knows? This Mystic Arcana hardcover might be a collector's item. We don't even know it.
Quite possibly. Limited edition.
Limited edition.
I mean, that number, they may as well print a number in it and say it's assigned a number to, or unsigned.
You might as well. 1,500 copies. They'd be all sold by now instead of what, 1,200 they have?
Yeah.
That would have been sweet. That's guerrilla marketing right there, man, at its finest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they could have jacked the price up to $35 even.
Well, you know, if you look at item 41, doesn't matter what the item is, but at rank 41, everything from there down is under 2,000 units.
Yeah.
And even in previous months, because this month started at a lower number, that's kind of common. I think last month it was maybe around rank 50 where that break was under 2,000. But this goes back to comments that I know Brian Hibbs has made, and I'm sure other retailers are feeling the pain, that there are too many items that just don't sell appreciably well. You know, how many stores even bothered to stock that Mystic Arcana? And frankly, how many of them should have bothered to stock it?
Right.
The last thing a store needs is for these collected editions to be sitting there gathering dust.
Well, that's like at 67, we have another edition of Queen and Country. This is, what, the third go-around for these books?
Well, it's my first go-around for this book.
Yeah, but, you know, but they pump it out and, it's, you know, they slap the definitive tag on there, which from my understanding, the definitive is a false title. Chris Niesman actually asked Rucka about that, and he's like, well, the definitive moniker is a misnomer.
How so?
Because it doesn't include the prose pieces.
Oh.
So, and definitive, I was talking to Chris about this, he's like, And I was saying, you know, definitive means final. It means like the final edition. It's like, you know, they could, you know, it's such a bad word for this.
I will admit I was surprised to find out that there was a solicitation for the second volume of it in the previews for February. I thought it was a one and done, but what do I know?
No, they're going to reprint them all.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been following it. I've just heard good things about Rucka. And
yeah.
So someday I'll get around to reading the trades. But now I have at least the first one. I don't know. It's a little disheartening to see where, you know, a lot of these things are selling, how many times they'll reprint some of these things. But it's getting to the point where trades are such a collected editions, I should say, because it's more than just trades, such a potential turning point for the industry.
Right.
You know, we've got so many items coming out each month. So much of it is the preferred format for a lot of readers. In some cases, it's a why did they even bother doing yet another trade of this? But we're seeing it across the board, big publishers, small publishers. The fact that we had Avatar, Dark Horse, and Viz all up in the top, you know, four items this month was cool.
Hey, let me interject. Let me ask you about a book and its placement and see if you're surprised or whether or not it's right on. 37, Wonder Woman Amazon's Attack, the hardcover for $25. High, low, just right. What do you think?
Let's see. It did 2,333 units. Monthly series, I'm thinking did, I want to say 50,000-ish. I think, and again, I don't recall how the monthly series did off the top of my head. And I didn't have time to compile the component issue stuff this time around.
Well, I just remember this, it tied into Countdown. And then it also tied in, it had its own little offshoot titles in, what, like Teen Titans?
Oh, yeah.
And a few other books, you know.
But it was also one that was quickly forgotten.
It was.
And I don't think there's any lasting brand awareness for that Amazon's Attack moniker. I think for a hardcover of an event thing for DC, particularly with one of the big three characters, to do under 2,400, you know, for opening numbers is a little weak. However, it is a hardcover, it is only six issues, and it is $25. This is another case where why didn't they go to the trade first? It's also interesting that this is already out in December, whereas the February previews is when they're starting to solicit the first Countdown trade.
Yeah.
So there's a timing issue there of why wait on the Countdown stuff, yet stuff that crossed heavily into it is already out in collected edition. So I would, on the one hand, I would say there's a certain rationale for thinking it, I don't want to say undersold, but did low. On the other side, it was such a forgettable series in terms of the collected memory of fans, it seems like, that the fact that, one, it came out with a hardcover is
right.
a collected edition at all. I mean, it's a given, but you know what I mean. And
right.
The 2,300 people gave a damn and bought it, or that stores thought there were enough to justify getting 2,300 copies into the stores. Because, I mean, for all we know, all 2,300 are sitting on shelves. I know that's not the case, but it's one of those things. Too many things are coming out. There's too much competing for the attention, and a lot of the fan base is into not even the what's now, but what's next.
Right, right. Well, what disappointed me about this hardcover is that it only included the Amazon's Attack stories 1-6, and I read every crossover into this series.
Yes, did I.
And I thought when you read Amazon, if you were to pick up Amazon's Attack solely, it didn't make that much sense, or you may have not have liked it much. But if you grabbed the Wonder Woman issues, you grabbed the Titans issues with Cassie, right? And you grabbed, what's the other one? They had a Supergirl one, which was pretty, that was a pretty good standalone story and tied in very well to Amazon's Attack. It really bothered me that those weren't included in this hardcover. It made the story so much better. You know, it was one of those things where the external books, the tie-in books, made the whole story that much better.
Yeah, but, I mean, if they did that, it would easily have been a 12-issue collection or something a bit more unwieldy.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Then why bother, but I guess take the bad parts out of Amazon's Attack and put in the good parts of Supergirl and Titans and Wonder Woman. You know,
yeah,
that's what really bugs me about these crossover events with the tie-ins, because some of the other tie-in books are better than what you're reading. And
yeah,
it's a shame, you know, that they leave it out. And then it, you know, then they all get traded into their own individual titles. And you're like, huh? You know, you're kind of left with the cliffhanger.
Well, again, flip side, you know, look at this from being the tie-in issue, you know, sort of a thing for Countdown.
Right, right.
You know, this hardback is kind of on both sides of this equation.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the stuff that tied into it that got left out, and it is what ties in it getting left out of the Countdown stuff. I think it's already such a unmemorable historic event in the mainstream of the DC continuity in history, and it didn't happen that long ago.
Right.
That, yeah, well,
Amazon Tech or Countdown?
Countdown was just a misfire.
Well, you know what? You kind of got lost. Because you don't know, it is a Wonder Woman story, first and foremost,
mm-hmm.
But you don't know if it's a JLA story or if it's a Countdown story. You really get lost in that mix of where does this belong in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
And plus, it didn't help that Wonder Woman just had an awful, you know, time out of the gate.
Yeah, but I mean, DC has had a number of scheduling problems. You look at Action Comics, Superman Confidential.
Yeah.
There were two or three other examples of that.
Oh, look at the Trials of Shazam.
From what I heard on that, the artist broke his hand and they had to replace him.
Well.
But I agree.
Here or there, they're still having issues getting the book out.
Yeah. Well, and even one that got out on time but had such a fumbled start content-wise was Flash Fastest Man Alive, and the Full Throttle trade, which I believe is the second of the trades, is in here at rank 29 with 2,732 units.
Right.
And I believe, and I could be wrong on that, so let me check, that is the one that collects the, yeah, that's the final half of the Bart Allen series, and
right,
includes his death. And nobody cares.
No.
You know, 2,700 plus copies, and maybe we'll see it on the list again. Maybe we won't. Probably not.
I think if Bart died as Impulse and not Flash, it'd be a bigger deal.
I would agree with that. Or even as Kid Flash, but yeah.
When I look at Bart, he's Impulse to me.
I agree with that.
He's not even Kid Flash. Maybe. I mean, Wally, I didn't grow up with a Kid Flash. I mean, I grew up with Wally, you know, and Bart or Barry was some Silver Age guy that, you know, just happened to die when I was starting to get into comics in 1985.
Hmm.
So Barry was never really my my Flash.
I started with Barry, loved him, and Wally was Kid Flash.
Yeah.
So the fact that Bart was that for, you know, a few, what, 2-3 years max is mm-hmm. just kind of a, you know, blip on the radar, if that.
Right, right.
I don't know. It's one of those things that they do, DC's doing what I don't want to say could be considered major events in their universe in terms of headline events, not big marketing story events, with killing off Bart, with the Amazon's attack, things of that nature. And, you know, once it's over, it's done. That's it. Nobody cares.
Well, because there's no repercussions from Amazon's attack that's going on right now in Countdown or JLA or Wonder Woman, really.
In theory, there is, both in Countdown, in Black Canary, Green Arrow, or Green Arrow, Black Canary, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think Wonder Woman as well, possibly even Wonder Girl. But it's such a background element.
Right.
You know, it comes down to they don't have a tight continuity. They don't have a sense of momentum. They don't have a sense of excitement. Whereas you look over at Marvel right now, and, you know, we just finish up World War Hulk. We know that's going to hit big when it hits trade and collected edition in a few months. They've got the Skrull Invasion stuff, you know, gearing up. They just mm-hmm. had Quesada on the Colbert Report recently to pitch that. And, you know, no doubt that'll do fairly well both in the monthlies and when it hits the collected editions, you know, about a year from now or whenever.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got people excited about their stories, talking about their stories, and I'm not seeing DC succeeding in that. You know,
it's
a marketing problem. You know, I'm excited about the Skrull Invasion, not because I've seen an in-house ad trying to make me excited about it, but because I've seen story points dropped in that it's like, oh, wow, that's exciting, that's interesting, where are they going with this? You know, compare that to the parody of the motivational posters for DC's in-house ad with Mongol and the various power rings.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one I saw online or something, I forget what it was even, the Brainiac one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all I'm getting out of that is a pretty picture and, oh, gee, you're doing a riff on the motivational posters. You're not getting me excited about the stories. Mm-hmm. And I should be getting that from the stories. Again, I'm looking at these things like Amazon's Attack. I'm not surprised it sold where it did. In terms of it not selling higher, and to a certain degree, you
right.
know, I'm surprised it did sell that well. Because when it was first solicited, I remember people saying, well, you know, it's another event, I've got Countdown, do I need to get into it, whatever.
Right.
You know, if you can't get people excited to begin with, you don't stand a chance in hell of getting them excited about the collected edition after it has either gotten negative buzz, no buzz, or whatever.
Well, John, I'll tell you what collected edition DC side I am going to get, and I'm very interested in reading, and that's Sinestro Corps.
I'm going to be very interested to see how those do in the collected edition.
I've got them pre-ordered. I'm ready to go with those things. It's going to be fun.
I thought it was an excellent story. I certainly think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think they mismanaged the marketing on that.
Yeah, they probably did. They probably miscalculated it, yeah.
I think it undersold on the monthly side.
That's why I think the collected editions are going to do so well.
I hope so.
Yeah. Now they're going to have three nice hardcovers sitting right back to back to back, so.
I hope they do a nice quality presentation of the material. I hope people are happy with what they get. I hope it's a good price point. And I hope that the positive buzz DC got from that storyline, that they're able to leverage that into successful sales of those collected editions.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they knocked it out of the park with that one.
Yeah.
The one shot that launched that storyline was one of the best comics, if not the best comic, I read in 2007.
Which one was that?
The original one shot, the Green Lantern.
The Green Lantern one, okay.
Or Sinestro Corps special or whatever it was.
Yeah, the special. Okay.
That very first one that launched it. And, I mean, that came out of essentially, there was an in-house ad that was, okay, Sinestro's back, he's going to fight the Green Lanterns, yeah, whatever. Nothing to get me excited about, you know, and then I read that story, and it's like, damn, this is good stuff. This is Geoff Johns,
yeah.
You know, doing a home run or whatever. Yet, because that first issue sold, I'm thinking 56,000 initially, I could be wrong. It did some healthy reorders, but if it cracked 100,000, and again, I'd have to go look, I'd be a little surprised. And then some of the more recent issues for it did, they've been selling okay, but like the Sinestro Corps Ion one, it did 56,000, that's pretty good. But, you know, even the Green Lantern 25, which I think capped off the story, was one of probably the better-selling ones of it, the storyline, and it did 90,000. So, I mean, that's a strong success. It's no Civil War, it's no World War Hulk, but
right.
it's sure as hell also no Annihilation, because Annihilation's good, but not setting the world on fire sales-wise. Same with Amazon's Attack and a number of other things that kind of did lackluster sales.
Right.
I really think it'll do pretty well, but again, the Green Lantern Corps 19, which is one of the ones that I think is going to get collected, obviously one of those storylines, 50,000 sales. I think the sales on the monthly side were capped by the limited availability potentially of the early issues. It got to a point
right.
where people said, oh, I'll just get it and trade. And definitely, highly recommend that storyline.
Yeah, I just sent you the
I saw that with the
solicitations for it. So I resolved three of them. February 20th, we're going to get Volume 1. June 4th, Volume 2. And then June 18th, the Tales of the Sinestro Corps hardcover. All hardcovers, which, like I said, I can't wait to put them all on my bookshelf.
Oh, yeah. That should be good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I know the spines of those books are just going to line up very nicely, too.
That Tales of the Sinestro Corps,
mm-hmm.
most of those are kind of side stories.
Right, right.
So it's not one that you are essential to get.
No, but I hope it'll include, when it says the Green Lantern Corps secret files, I hope it's got the Sinestro War secret files. I don't know if that's the same one.
That is the Sinestro
Corps. But I just
picked,
it is?
Actually, I don't know. I'd have to go look. I don't know.
Okay, because I just picked up the secret files of the Sinestro Corps War. And that sucker, for what, $4 or $5 that it was? I got my money's worth out of that.
Oh,
one.
Yeah.
That thing's loaded.
That was well done. I was impressed
yeah.
with that one.
And I hope that is included in one of these books, if they, you know, hurry up and throw it in there.
I would imagine that was the Green Lantern Corps secret files they're talking about.
Is it? Okay.
Because I don't know that they've done a secret Corps for the Green Lantern Corps before, but the actual monthly one was Green Lantern Sinestro Corps secret files, so that's got to be what it was.
You think so?
It's got to be.
Because
it's ranked 61 on the monthly stuff for December.
It just came out in December, yeah.
Yeah, and it did 39,696 units. But again, it's you know, it's a handbook type thing. So it's usually going to do a little worse than the core story. But yeah, that's one that out of all the upcoming hardcovers and event type things on the DC side, that's something I can see doing pretty well and potentially topping the chart. You know, as to whether or not it does, who knows, but it's got the potential.
Cool.
So, anything else?
No, I think we're good.
I think so too. All right. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is voiding the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.